On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we have three trades to talk about. Kyle Tucker is a Chicago Cub, Devin Williams is a New York Yankee, and Jeffrey Springs is on the A's. Yeah, Jeffrey Springs. And of course, as Jake is still abroad, we have another edition of Baseball in the Wild on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who believes that Kyle Tucker's nickname is the worst in baseball. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. King Tuck? Really? If he was Egyptian, then I could deal with it. But it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they've really leaned into that one. And as we, of course, lead this here episode of Baseball Barbacast with the massive news that one of the best players in baseball has been traded to a team that desperately needs one of the best players in baseball, we should probably talk a little bit about Kyle Tucker's journey from Florida high schooler to King Tuck. Yes, on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will be talking about three big trades. Oh boy, the trade market is heating up. And as I say always on the show, these are always more fun to talk about than signings. Of course, it's cool when Team X gives player Y a bunch of millions of dollars, but these are the moves that we cannot see coming and we must react accordingly. And we have three big ones to get to. We are going to start with Kyle Tucker. We are going to get to Devin Williams being traded to the Yankees. The Rays and A's, a swap of current minor league teams trading players to each other, minor league ballparks at least. We'll get to the Jeffrey Springs trade. And then, oh boy, I'm excited for an edition of Baseball in the Wild, which I was looking forward to you bringing at some point during your journey. And I'm excited for the first edition of that. But Jake, how are you? You're still in Vietnam. You have not. This was not just like a quick weekend trip. You're still on the other side of the world.
No, this will be an extended jaunt through Southeast Asia. But I am thankful for the Communist Party's Wi-Fi that has allowed us to bless your ear holes with the beautiful sounds of baseball podcasting. And on this episode, we will begin, as we always do, with the opener. Kyle Tucker traded to the Cubs. Kyle Tucker is the perfect style of player to be considered the most underrated player in baseball, which is a way of saying that boy is boring. That boy is on a team with a lot of other famous, skilled baseball players that came before him that overshadowed him. Kyle Tucker debuted after Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Yordan Alvarez, that whole crew, Carlos Correa, George Springer, had already made the Astros the Astros. And so they win in 2017 without Kyle Tucker. And so when he shows up, it just feels like icing on the cake. However, he is sensational in his own right. I think there is a chance that my mom does not know who Kyle Tucker is, and she listens to every episode. Kyle Tucker is pretty definitively a top 20 player in Major League Baseball. And he is on the move from the Houston Astros to the Chicago Cubs. Jordan, what are the details of the trade?
So the Cubs are getting Kyle Tucker and the 1 year remaining on his contract. That is, of course, a very relevant part of this conversation. The Astros acquiring three players. Third baseman Isak Paredes, whose second stint as a Chicago Cubs somehow shorter than his first. The odds of that must have been pretty long. Cam Smith, the Cubs' first-round pick. This is the second 2024 first-round pick we've seen traded in the last week as he joins Braden Montgomery on the move from the club that just drafted him. And then right-handed pitcher Hayden Wesneski, a Houston native, a guy I've always been a fan of. This is also the second time he's been traded, as he was originally a Yankee, traded to the Cubs, and now he's traded to his hometown Houston Astros. But let's stick on Tucker here, okay? Because what you just said, okay, this is one of the top 20 players or so in baseball, and my mom might not know who he is, right? Totally valid. I think let's rewind a little bit, even a year, because what Kyle Tucker had done before 2024 was basically just the same season three times. It was like five war. It was almost exactly 30 home runs. The production went a little bit down in 2022 compared to 2021 and 2023, but it was as as completely reliable as it gets. And that alone, that consistency, that excellent defense in right field, that strong plate discipline and the power, it was so consistent and reliable. That is why, and because of his age, you were like, all right, this guy's one of the best. And then, though he was injured for in 2024, he took it up a notch. And what he did at the plate in 2024 in just 78 games was he was one of the best hitters in baseball when he was playing. This is a 993 OPS. He has more walks than strikeouts, which he had, you know, come close to doing last year, but it ticked up, you know, to a really, really special level to where now we are talking about definitively, no doubt, one of the best players in the league.
I think you're maybe glossing over the 2023 season a bit. I mean, he finished fifth in MVP voting in the American League. And you had a very fitting comparison for him, which is outfield Corey Seager.
Yeah. And I think that that is the most fair comparison. Now, he obviously, and by the way, there are a lot of parallels, right? I mean, Corey Seager, when he comes up with the Dodgers, it's a little bit more immediate, right? Tucker, it took a couple years for him to establish himself as like a clear all-star level player, whereas Seager, I mean, he showed up and just won Rookie of the Year immediately. I mean, he was third in MVP as a 22-year-old. Tucker, it took a little bit longer, but in the same way where it's just like, oh yeah, that guy, like, don't worry about him, but he's just going to hit and he's just going to be one of our best players for the next however many years. And, you know, in some ways now, it ends a little bit more different. We know Corey Seager leaves in free agency instead of getting traded. But we did wonder with the Dodgers, like, is this guy going to stay a Dodger for forever? Like, he's done everything you could kind of hope for besides stay healthy, but performance-wise, he's done it. And with Kyle Tucker, you know, what more could... I know the injuries he had this past year, but what more could you really ask from him, right? Like, this seems like a guy you would want to build around for a long time, and yet now he's not on the Astros anymore.
That is shocking. And when you evaluate this type of trade, you have to split it apart. There is the decision to trade Kyle Tucker, a player of his stature, and there is the return that you get for that player. Once you accept that the Astros believed that they needed to trade Kyle Tucker, you can evaluate the package separately. I want to start with part one. Why is he getting dealt? Why is a player of this caliber getting moved off a team that's really, really good now or trying to win in the present? That ownership group has not spent massively in free agency. Kyle Tucker, given his age and the Juan Soto shadow, is probably going to get a deal over $375 million. It will potentially eclipse $400 million if he stays healthy this season. There's a path to that. The Astros were not going to pay that. I think their unwillingness to pay that is embarrassing, because that's what the money's for. As I sit in this Vietnamese hotel room beneath a Daikin air conditioning unit, I say, aren't you getting 150 smackaroos to rename your stadium? Didn't you just make the playoffs 8 years in a row and go to 7 ALCSs? Like, is this not a profitable enterprise enough that you can splash the cash on one big guy, on Kyle Tucker here? Now, part of the reason they're a little bit more financially hamstrung is there were a few bad contracts given out a handful of years ago that have bloated their payroll in a really ugly way. Contracts that were handed out by the owner, Jim Crane, and not by any actual general manager. So I think that when a team as successful as the Astros is opts not to extend a player like Kyle Tucker, that is the fault. That is the problem. Because you should want to keep a player that good in a city that cares about baseball for a long time. And it's not like Houston is a small market, right? Like, they make money. People go to these games. And it kind of bums me out. And if I was an Astros fan, I would be frustrated. Now, I understand that the larger baseball landscape isn't here playing the tiniest violin for Astros fans. Like, oh, boo-hoo, you lost Kyle Tucker. Like, oh. But it's annoying. It's certainly annoying if you care about this team.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of those contracts, right? They still owe $30 million to Jose Abreu and Rafael Montero in 2025, right? But I think what's also interesting is, what is a comparison? Like, this feels familiar. Well, we did see a version of this with Juan Soto last year. And this isn't to say that Kyle Tucker's as good as Juan Soto, although let's be honest, he ain't that far behind. Okay. Like, listen, I'm the number one Juan Soto fan. Yes, he is a generational hitter, but in terms of overall value, like, do I think he's going to get $800 million? No, whatever. But the point is that when we're talking about 1 year left, what you're trading for, the kind of impact that he in theory could give. I mean, again, this is why we're going to get to the very hefty trade return, right? I mean, the Cubs gave up some serious stuff here. But the reason I bring that up is because the comparison is the situation as much as the actual player involved. Because the Padres a year ago, it was like, really? Like, I know they weren't the original team that traded Juan Soto, and you can mention the Nationals as a comparison here too. But to me, their path forward last year, because of some financial constraints, some self-imposed, some because, again, they had committed to so many other players long-term, was... this is our path to restocking the pitching and extending our window in a more balanced way. And I think the Astros are looking at this as saying, okay, we have this trade chip that can give us foundational pieces that can help right now and in the future. Obviously, Isak Paredes is a fascinating version of that. Cam Smith, the first round pick, who is extremely promising and is going to be on a bunch of top 100 lists. Like, that's the kind of player that this farm system, which has been very bad, has not really had. And so this was their opportunity to acquire someone like that, and they chose to take it.
And so that is our next segment. Player overviews. We just talked about Tucker for a long time. Let's dive into some of the pieces going the other way. Isak Paredes, who was an all-star last year with the Tampa Bay Rays, dealt at the deadline to the north side of Chicago in return for Christopher Morel. It was an odd fit at the time, considering that the Cubs didn't seem to be in contention, and Paredes was pretty bad for them down
really
the stretch.
Bad. Yeah.
Really bad. And he was blocking an infield spot for top prospect Matt Shaw, and it was clear that opening a road for Shaw was a priority for the Cubs this winter. They were going to deal either Paredes or second baseman Nico Horner to make that happen. And Paredes was the player they decided to move. What makes Paredes such a singular ball player?
So Paredes is built for Daikin Park. He didn't know it for many years, but now those two words will be associated for at least the next 3 years, assuming they are going to build around him. This man likes to pull the baseball, and he likes to pull the baseball in the air. Well, he does not hit it especially hard or harder than the you know, traditional third base sluggers like Cam Smith, for example, who can absolutely, you know, punish the ball. Paredes pulls the baseball in the air more frequently than almost any other hitter in baseball. Why is that important? Well, if you listen to this show, you're familiar with the dimensions of Daikin Park. You know about the Crawford boxes, and you know that you don't have to hit it that far to hit it into those seats. And so he is, in a way that he kind of wasn't at all in the way that Wrigley is configured, by the way, which is part of why last summer we were like, is this approach going to work in Chicago? And they quickly realized, maybe not. And they're able to flip him as a very key part here for Houston moving forward under team control for the next three seasons. It is interesting how we perceive this because of how bad he was after, right? Like, say he continued to be an all-star. The Cubs still miss the playoffs and they're irrelevant. But like, Paredes continues to perform at an all-star level for the rest of the season. I mean, yes, he would still be blocking Matt Shaw, and Cubs fans would be excited about Matt Shaw. But I also have to imagine that this would be a little bit harder to part with, right? Whereas Now Cubs fans are like, oh yeah, he sucks, whatever, it's fine. Like, moving on.
You never saw the good part of this guy. And so from a fan perspective, it's much easier to let go of him. Nickname alert, pole wall.
Ooh, man. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
In Houston, pole wall.
I understand. I'm following. No need to over explain a very, very good pull, but it's like, can we slightly to pull over the wall?
Pull wall.
It's good. This is good. Now Paredes, again, it feels like, because we've seen him on, this is now, I guess, his fourth team as a big leaguer. He's only 25. He'll turn 26 just before opening day. I am curious what the defensive home is. I don't want to speculate too much because I imagine the next Astros move is coming at some point. He did play a good amount of first base last year, and that is also a hold. Now, the obvious thing is, okay, great. Now he's the third baseman and Bregman's gone. You could see a situation where they bring Bregman back and Paredes plays first, because really what they're counting on here is that Paredes is going to rake in Houston. And so, if he's also playing third base, great. You know, he's fine over there. But that is an interesting part, is where they kind of see him defensively.
Hayden Wesneski, a under the radar, pick to click, a favorite of friend of the show, Foolish Baseball, Houston native. If he regains some of the prospect zip he had when he was like on the cusp of the big leagues a handful of years ago, he could be a back of the rotation guy. Now, is he someone who you want starting a playoff game? Not right now. But the Astros just turned Spencer Arrighetti into a, from a silly name into a pretty electrifying starting pitcher. And so I'm not going to bet against the Astros to turn Wesneski into something very valuable.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this guy, right? He had a lot of buzz because he looked really good when he first debuted in 2022, 2023, and 2024. We've kind of seen him bounce between the rotation and the bullpen. But Houston has kind of a similar situation with the Dodgers. I mean, the pitchers aren't as good, but they have a lot of guys on various injury recovery timelines, and there's a lot of talent there. But I think especially when, you know, Framber Valdez is another part of this conversation. He's another guy with a year left on his contract. Dana Brown said after they traded Tucker, like, we do not intend to trade Framber, but we're going to listen. This is a good guy to kind of just have around. Maybe he ends up in a long relief role. Maybe he ends up turning into the next Hunter Brown or Arrighetti or whatever. But I think he will help them. I think he will go in and compete for a spot. And when Javier and McCullers and JP France, you know, I don't know how much we're going to see those guys in 2025. But obviously, you would maybe slot them in above a guy like Wesneski. But I like this arm. I think this is also a big part of it. I don't know how important he was going to be to the Cubs in 2025, but the talent is definitely there. So I like that addition.
Hey, listener, are you hungry? Do you need to be satiated with information about minor league baseball players? Well, step inside Jordan's prospect hut and get educated on Cam Smith.
Have a seat. Have a seat. Cameron Smith, as he was known as a somewhat not super famous high schooler in Florida, he was not like a super hot name out of high school a couple years ago because he was very old. He was a 19 on draft day, and he's like, he's just big and old. Like, how good is this guy really? But what you want to see from the older high schoolers when they do go to college, and it's important because they're going to be draft eligible after only 2 years, is you just dominate right away. And that is exactly what happened. This dude showed up to Florida State, and it was like, oh, he looks like he's the oldest, biggest, strongest, best player on the team immediately, basically as a freshman. And then he got even better as a sophomore this past year, to the point where, you know, he hit his way into the first round. And again, he's gigantic. He is, and to gigantic to the point where, like, is he going to be a third baseman? Is he going to be kind of a corner outfielder? I don't know. You're buying a bat. It's kind of a unique swing as well. But he is just so powerful. And after the draft, he had just an outrageous hot streak. The guy homered in six straight games, I think. Within like his first 15 professional games, he reached AA already. So there was a version where, you know, if the Cubs infield wasn't crowded enough, that he was going to be kind of factoring into the conversation at some point. And instead, the Astros really, you know, bet big on him as the real key piece in this deal.
I went and saw him in Omaha, the College World Series for Florida State. And I fell in love with the bat, with the physicality, and do not love the defense. Like, this is a corner outfielder or a first baseman for me. Yeah. You can try him at third and see how it goes, but I would imagine you'll eventually, like, he'll play games in the major leagues at third base. And I think if everything goes right in 10 years, you'll look back and be like, do you remember when Cam Smith played third base, like in the Pujolsian mold, just from a defensive perspective? But when you're at the College World Series, and some of these players are men, and some of them are still college students, and Cam Smith
even in Omaha, right? Like, these are the best teams in college baseball, but there is a difference between, like, Wyatt Langford, right? When we saw him in Omaha, we're like, oh my God. And Cam Smith is a lot taller.
But he is just freaking stacked on top of himself. He has layers, okay? His muscles have muscles. He is just what it looks like. Like, that's what a major league baseball player is built like. And so does that mean he's going to be an all-star? I don't know. I think he's going to be a pretty impactful bat, and I like this return as a whole for the Astros. What are the Astros trying to do? What is the goal of this trade? They are trying to keep the window of contention open, right? They are trying to elongate this historic run that they've been on. It is really important to note that this is a departure from their established strategy. They have not done something like this in this stretch. They have not traded away a player. They have had ample opportunities to do so. They have opted to let these players leave in free agency and take the compensation pick, right? George Springer, Carlos Correa, key members of these teams who up and left. And the decision to trade Tucker in the here and now, I think, speaks more to poor decisions that were made in terms of financial allocation a couple years ago that hamstrung them more than anything else. And I, as much as I like the return, I think the fact that the Astros have even done this shows that there are cracks at the foundation of this empire.
Oh, yeah. And it's as simple as, and there again, long winter ahead. And so maybe they retain Bregman. Maybe they add some more bats. I mean, you look at this lineup right now, and it, even if you factor in a good version of Paredes, it just doesn't
look
remotely.
The outfield sucks.
Yeah, it's just right now, it's McCormick and Myers. And of course, McCormick took a huge step back offensively last year. And then like Taylor Trammell, who they got on waivers. And, you know, I love Taylor Trammell, one of my favorite humans in baseball, but he has not been a good major leaguer at really any point. And so the fact that he's in that mix there, I guess they still have Dubon and like, they don't have that depth in the minors, right? Like they, I'm not saying they're going to rush Camp Smith and he's going to be a big leaguer in July, but they don't have that next wave. And so to trade from your best, you know, arguably your best overall player, right? I mean, Yordan is Yordan. And as long as they have him, you're going to be terrified at some point during a game against the Astros. So that's like a nice safety blanket. I mean, it's basically as close to as you can get with a Soto, right? Like in terms of just like, you know, he will be one of the best hitters of baseball. And there is zero doubt about that. But it's just everything about it. And Altuve is going to be 35. Like, it just does not look like the behemoth that we have known them to be. Not even close.
Dana Brown, the general manager of this team, went on a radio show at some point last year and said the following. This is via Chandler Rome of The Athletic, who is just, he does a phenomenal job on the beat of covering the Astros. Quote, let's say this. Kyle Tucker will be a Houston Astro for his career. I think he really wants to stay here. I think we'll get something done. We are focused on getting to the postseason, winning the division, and getting deep into the postseason right now. But at the end of the day, we feel strongly that we'll get something done. Things change. GMs say stuff and are wrong all the time. But I think this is just interesting because of how obvious that felt at the time. The Astros had done extensions for Alvarez and for Altuve. And so it... Yeah. Was within the realm of possibility that they could have kept Tucker around. And the price has only gone up as he's gotten better and better. And I think that not Dana Brown, but ownership led by Jim Crane deserves a little bit of criticism for not getting the deal done when that price was lower. Right. And now that the price is going to be in the $380 million range, you understand why they're like balking at that figure. But guess what? You missed your window. It's just so outside what the Astros have done. What are the Cubs trying to do? The Cubs are trying to make the freaking playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, not only have they not made the playoffs since the goofy 2020 get embarrassed by the Marlins in front of zero people postseason appearance, they have not won a postseason game since 2017. And we've drawn a couple parallels to them and the Red Sox in some sense, where it's like, how can the Cubs be this irrelevant while also still spending a lot of money, but not as much money as they should be spending? The Red Sox have won a World Series more recently than the Cubs have won a postseason game. Okay.
And the Red Sox went to the 2021 ALCS. Yeah. Like they were good that year.
Yeah. But this has been a long time of this Cubs team not being there. We've talked about it with Jeff Passan. We've talked about it other times. Like they need
to do. But it feels shorter than that because Cubs fans are like, 5 years? I did 100
today. Do times 20. What's the big deal? But no, it's a new era. You establish a new standard and you should hold those expectations a lot higher. And so now that you've been stuck in the middle for this many years and you've assembled a lot of good players, but not great players, this is a big swing. Finally, all the trying to be, you know, smarter than, it's like, no, they're like, you know what? Screw it. We need one of the best players in baseball. This is how we are going to access it. We would rather pay from our depth of players. You know, they still have a lot of good prospects, right? Same way with the Red Sox with the Crochet deal. I'm sure they weren't thrilled to give up the prospects that they gave up, but they still have more. And they apparently would rather do that than give free agent X, you know, $500 million. And so this is the opportunity. Maybe they try and extend Tucker or whatever. I'm sure, again, I think if we've learned anything from the Soto situation, there's no way that Jed Hoyer is going to be like, oh yeah, Kyle Tucker is going to be a Cub for life, right? They understand. They understand what they're trying to do here. And it's a big risk, and but also one that I appreciate that they're making, because if any team should be really pushing for it now, it should be them.
If you search wins above replacement for Cubs position players since 2020, okay? Mm. I'm on Fangraphs. This is single season.
Oh,
okay. What do you think is the highest single season WAR for a Cubs position player?
I mean, is it like a? I'm not going to guess. Oh, probably Bellinger.
Dansby in 2023, where okay. He was an average offensive player and a great defender. It. My point is that there's not a lot here.
Yeah, I would have guessed Bellinger's first year, but yeah.
4.9 wins, okay? Last year, Kyle Tucker was worth 4.2 wins in 79 games. That would put him sixth on this list, okay? And he played less than half a season. And that is what the Cubs are trying to do here. They have built such a good supporting cast of players without the star in the middle of it. And they've been chasing that star, and they've been letting other players go by. And I am fascinated that this is how they opted to try and go get that guy. It smells a little bit like the Orioles going to get Corbett Burns a little bit, where it's like, we have you for 1 year. We hope it goes really well. Here we go. The difference is Jed Hoyer, the Pobo of the Cubs, is working with a little bit of urgency because he is on the hot seat. His underpants are a little bit toasty right now, because since taking over from Theo Epstein, he has not made the playoffs. Okay.
Yeah.
The Cubs have not made the playoffs under Jed Hoyer. And so the urgency here is real. And I give him a little bit of credit for doing something that makes him uncomfortable. Now, that's what you should be doing as a general manager. If you only operate within your comfort zone, you end up like Farhan Zaidi, San Francisco Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Go Cubs, go. Go Cubs, go.
Yeah.
I want this team to be relevant. Like, when the Cubs bang, it's awesome. For ball, right? Mm-hmm. And Kyle Tucker gives them a really, really good chance to do that.
Yep. Amen. Now, where they go from here, again, I mean, both of these teams have more work to do. They've both given themselves more work to do. They've either crowded or, you know, shallowed out. You know, we see the Astros outfield. It's like, what's the plan here? You see the Cubs outfield. You're like, well, this is too many players. Bellinger is obviously a big part of this conversation. Yeah, we'll probably get resolved at some point in the near future, so we will save that for when it actually gets handled.
I'm sure Bellinger will be on the A's by the time you're listening to this podcast, but the point I want to bring up about Bellinger is we had discussed earlier this offseason that the Cubs didn't want him to opt in.
Mm-hmm.
And their offseason plan has basically been acting as if he opted out, right? Like, they are not changing their approach based upon Cody Bellinger being on the team, and I think that's a good thing. The way that Cubs beat writers are talking about Bellinger, it is a foregone conclusion that he is gone. And I just find that situation fascinating, similar to Arenado, when we get into situations where it's just like, oh yeah, they're getting traded. Because usually we're like, the language that is used to talk about these guys is like, oh, this could happen, like, depending on these things, like, it's a possibility. But this is like, Cody Bellinger, like, friggin' pack your bags, because you're going to be playing somewhere else.
But that's also why this deal is so fun, right? Like, we've been talking about Bellinger getting traded since the second he opted in, and somehow Kyle Tucker got traded to the Cubs before Bellinger got traded. Like, that is an amazing sequence. The last thing on this before we take a break is just the reported angle that the Yankees did try and were not willing to part with Luis Gil and George Lombard Jr., their other first-round pick from this past year or the year before. The year before, teenage shortstop who's certainly one of their better prospects. But that is interesting, right? We know the Yankees have more to do, so it's not like, okay, well, that was their only chance to address their outfield. But that is a choice that the Yankees made. to, and maybe they were weighing both offers and maybe they would have picked the Cubs one. Who's to say? But we do know, we have confirmation that the Yankees tried to get Kyle Tucker and they failed. So that is compelling. Now, fortunately for them, he's no longer in the American League. So that's still a win. I don't have to deal with him as much, but they did not end up getting him. And that is interesting.
Brian Cashman watched the highlights of Michael King dominating the Braves in the wild card round and was like, I'm gonna hold on to Luis Hill. I
think not doing that again. But the Yankees did do something, and we're gonna talk about it when we get back from this break. Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. The Kyle Tucker deal wasn't the only swap we saw over the weekend. As a former guest of the podcast, On the Move, Foolish Baseball, where?
Foolish Baseball has been traded to, I don't even have an end to this joke, but
Jeff Passan to Breitbart?
Caleb Durbin, the headliner in this massive blockbuster between the New York Yankees and the Milwaukee Brewers, as our friend Caleb Wash U legend traded from the New York Yankees with Nestor Cortes Jr. to Milwaukee for, oh yeah, one of the best closers on earth, Devin Williams. We will get to Durbin in a few minutes, of course, but let's start with the actual headliner, and that is Devin Williams. One of the best relievers in baseball since he debuted, what was that, 2019, I think, was his original debut. And then 2020 was like, oh my God, this is, talk about one of the great 2020 performances that we have. The Devin Williams 2020 experience was special.
He allowed one run. He allowed one run in 2020.
Yeah, he has been magnificent, of course, as the Brewers. He was, you know, the eighth inning and the closer. Now he's been the closer more recently. He also has 1 year remaining on his contract. So like Kyle Tucker, this is not necessarily a long-term pact. But this is a fascinating trade, as the Yankees were going to have to, address their bullpen in some form, with a lot of their main guys hitting free agency, not named Luke Weaver. The Luke Weaver Devin Williams combo that everyone will be fearing, as we all could have seen a year ago. This is quite a big swing here for Brian Cashman to continue to react to losing Juan Soto by adding elite pitchers. You know, we've talked about it with Max Fried, how, okay, maybe we can't access elite offensive talent right now. We know they did try with Tucker, but instead they are trying to turn this pitching staff into kind of the backbone of this roster. And this is certainly one hell of a way to do that.
When you talk about Devin Williams, as we hop into our player overview, it's all about the airbender. His changeup is a singular offering. No pitch in baseball moves the way that it does. He throws it a ton, as he should. It's like, when you have a friend who can really sing and they never sing, you're like, what are you doing? Use it. Use that gift. And that's Devin Williams with his airbender. He had a very fascinating tenure with the Brewers, where for the first few seasons, he was kind of behind Josh Hader on the hierarchy of relievers. Hader gets moved. There's the moment where Williams punches a wall and messes up his hand. I think he like fractured his hand, but it was a joyful punch. It was in the celebration after they won the Central Division title in 2021. On the Wikipedia page, this is hilarious. It goes, it was announced that Williams would miss the remainder of the season after fracturing his pitching hand after drinking alcohol and punching a wall following the celebrations. I don't think it needs to say drinking alcohol. I think that if you are in a locker room celebration, that was implied, and I don't think that's why he punched the wall. Anyway, he became the closer after that year when they traded Hader, and then he had some back issues in 2024 that really limited his usage, and I think that is worth talking about because back issues are scary and they do linger, and that is the biggest red flag I have about him specifically as a pitcher moving forward. But if you're talking about the 10 best relievers on planet Earth, like, he is on that list, and it's not even a debate. And the Yankees needed one of those guys.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned his playoff non-appearance because of that poor decision. He also has had some unfortunate playoff outings in 2023. He walked three batters in his lone outing. We know, of course, he allows that home run to Pete Alonso in the third game of the wildcard series as the Mets ended up eliminating them. But in the regular season, again, these are the tiniest of samples, and that Alonso home run was so amazing because people just don't hit those home runs against Devin Williams. It just doesn't happen. And so that is why that moment was so amazing. But he's just been unbelievable. You mentioned that back injury. I mean, he missed the first few months, but then he came back and barely skipped a beat. I mean, he looked as good as ever once he was back. But as you mentioned, that is not an injury you take lightly. And I imagine the medicals were a big part of this trade, not just for Devin Williams, but also for Nestor Cortes, who we can get to in a second. But listen, I mean, this guy has been as good as it gets and as reliable as it gets. The command is still not awesome. Like, he's still walking over four guys per nine. But when your stuff is this good, and the velo is even up a little bit, we saw in the second half of the regular season, he's pretty automatic if he is going to be on the mound. So it is a huge deal, and obviously a massive addition to the Yankees bullpen.
What about Nestor Cortes Jr.?
This was, I think, a bit of a miscalculation from us, and I think a lot of people who kind of maybe had the end of his season also cloud how we think about him, right?
What happened?
Because of that injury.
I missed it.
So Nestor Cortes Jr. is just in the Yankees rotation the whole year. The injury does not happen until the end of September, and he's fine. He's a league average pitcher.
Fine.
But league average over 30 starts is valuable, especially when you're left-handed. And he did it all the way.
I've been league average over 30 years.
Yeah. And that's of life. Look where that's gotten you. I think you're doing pretty well. You're in Vietnam. But Nestor, the injury happens at the end of the regular season. And then it's like, oh, well, elbow injury. We don't love that. Or flexor tendon. Is he going to pitch in the postseason? Oh, he's coming back. He's throwing lives. Oh, we got to get him on the roster.
But, and there he has the quote that, it would be smartest for me to not pitch. Like, if I wanted to watch out for my health, I wouldn't pick up a baseball right now.
You don't say, Nestor. Would it have been smartest if you did not pitch? Of course, he is added to the World Series roster. He is thrust into the highest leverage spot of his career. And Freddie Freeman hits the first walk-off Grand Slam in World Series history. We know that's what happened. That was not a reflection of Nestor's season at all, right? We did not watch that and think Nestor stinks. It was just,
man,
like,
this guy can't get Freddie Freeman out in the ninth inning of the World Series.
Right. That ain't why Milwaukee's trading for him. They're trading for him because Nestor Cortes, before his injury, threw more innings in 2024 than any Brewers pitcher. 174. No Brewers pitcher threw that many innings, right? Peralta came close. They need innings. A lot of teams need innings badly. And the Brewers are still in win-now mode. The fact that they traded Devin Williams for another guy with 1 year remaining on his contract, and Durbin, who's definitely important here, we'll get to him in a second, is kind of amazing, right? I mean, I think when you assume the team like Milwaukee is going to flip the 1 year of the guy for guys that are going to be around for a long time, as we just saw with the Tucker trade, right? This is like, all right, like, this is a guy that is going to help us compete for another NL Central crown. And I'm excited to see what the Brewers pitching development does with all the goofy stuff that Nestor does. Like, that's a fun match in and of itself. So I think that's definitely interesting, but he's going to be a really important part of the rotation next year, and I do not anticipate him coming in to face Freddie Freeman if they face the Dodgers in the NLDS.
I give Nestor a lot of credit, man. Like, the Yankees tried to trade him at the deadline, and he knew it, and everyone knew it.
Yeah,
almost did, and he wore that and then went to the bullpen when they asked him to, which was wild because he was better than Stroman, right? And then he went back to the rotation, and that kind of probably hurt his elbow. And he went out there and pitched against Freeman. And then I'll never forget him just eating it, wearing it during the post game in the clubhouse. Like,
I mean, you mentioned that
it's the job. Like,
it's the job. No, and he's handled it 100%. But, and I know we're really harping on this too much, but it really was, because we talk about that moment, that homer. But it was, as to your point, it was everything before and after it. And I think I talked about this at the time, where we were sitting in the aux box down the left field line, like, we couldn't see who was warming up. We just knew that someone was coming in.
We thought it was Tim
Hill. When Nestor, I didn't know Nestor was warming up. And so when he came out, I was like, all right, Tim Hill. Like, I was like mentally preparing for Tim Hill for 10 minutes.
And Nestor looks a lot different than Tim Hill.
To the point where I was like, who is that? Now, granted, he was as far away from where we were sitting as possible when he trotted in. But I was just like, I can't. This is unbelievable. This is like the most ridiculous thing I've seen. So anyway, yeah.
I think Nestor leaves the Bronx with a very high Q rating amongst
absolutely
Yankee fans.
100%.
As someone who showed up as nothing, right? As a bit. He showed up as a shtick, and he left as a big piece in acquiring the best closer maybe in the world, and having been very good for the New York Yankees over a long time. He liked being a Yankee. He cared about what that was and what that meant. And I hope that that fan base gazes upon him fondly as he departs. Caleb Durbin. We don't even need to ask Jordan to boot up his prospect hut with this one. You can go listen to our interview that we did with Caleb earlier on this offseason. Caleb originally drafted by the Braves in the 14th round out of a crap school called Washington University in St. Louis, where I played baseball. Not as good as Caleb Durbin. Traded to the Yankees for Lucas Litke. The Yankees really help him elevate into a different type of player. Now they flip him. He looked like he was going to be the starting second baseman for the Yankees.
Or at least on the roster.
At least on the roster. Like, they added him the 40 man. He was unbelievable in the Arizona Fall League. He was going to give them a dynamic they didn't really have. But this is a piece you can part with and not cry tears over, because you can backfill that value somewhere else on the free agent market. Like, it's not, I love Caleb Durbin. I think he's going to be a good big leaguer. He's going to be a big leaguer. Like, Devin Williams is Devin Williams. So we don't really need to spend too much time explaining what the Yankees are trying to do. They're trying to solidify their bullpen without giving up a ton. And the prices for players like Devin Williams are typically very high. What are the Brewers trying to do? They are trying to Brewers. If you are on the Brewers and you are good and you are not on an extension and you're about to hit free agency, they're going to trade you. It's the same thing that the Rays do and the Guardians do. And it's just how these cheaper teams do business. And they think the Durbin fits kind of the vibe that they're going for. And boy, oh boy, is that freaking right. And they're going to let Nestor cook and have him throw 160 innings. And that's the point.
Yeah. I mean, Nestor, we've already touched on, but Durbin is important because they don't have Willie Adames anymore. And how they choose to deploy their infield, whether it's, Joey Ortiz at shortstop, which I think is the most likely move, whether it's Durbin getting shortstop reps, would you move Bryce Terang from second to short? I doubt it. I think Bryce Terang is kind of in that Andrés Giménez bucket of, when you're that good at second, like, let's just not mess with it. But Durbin's going to be right in the mix there as one of those versatile guys, and should certainly, I mean, we know Pat Murphy's going to freaking love him. I mean, that's like
the most obvious
thing of all time. So we are still looking forward to Caleb Durbin making his major league debut in 2025. And let's be honest, I know he didn't grow up a Brewers fan, but closer to home, right? I mean, he's a Chicago native, and that should be really cool to definitely have some people, I'm sure, closer to him in his life that will get to see that debut in 2025.
Brewers, Cardinals, two WashU grads going toe-to-toe in the division. Are you kidding me? I love this trade.
Ryan Lutis. We should say his name. He deserves more love.
Ryan Lutis. I love this trade for the Yankees because I'm worried about Nestor's elbow. Now, I have no inside information on that, but when a guy just straight up says, I shouldn't be pitching. Here I go.
Right now, obviously the Brewers have more information than we do, and any, Matt Arnold said he's had a healthy offseason, but I think that's fair, right? I mean, he just threw a career high, right? Yeah, career high number of innings, and then he finished the year injured. So that's, I would say that
it's
about
any
pitcher.
It's not just that he finished it injured. You don't hear players go, yeah, I probably shouldn't be doing this. Like, it's not great.
No, I know. I know, but I think that's fair. Again, we have no way we could say that about anyone acquiring any pitcher. But it's a fun trade, and obviously because Caleb Durbin is involved, and then poor you. I mean, you literally had to wake up to this, right? I mean,
I got a text from friend of the program Jorge Castillo of ESPN, and it just said, "Sorry, bud," and I was like, Jorge lives in the same building as me. I was like, did I get evicted? Like, are my plans all dead?
Like, is like all of your...
I was like, what's going on? And then I went to MLB Trade Rumors and saw the news.
You're like, oh. Okay.
Devin Williams as the Yankees closer will be a fun character because no fan base has a weirder relationship with their closer than the Yankees of Mariano Rivera's shadow. The Yankees had the most locked down human being in that spot for like 50 years. And then no one can be that good and provide that level of confidence ever again. Like Clay Holmes and Aroldis were both really good, like really good. Infuriating for very opposite reasons at times.
Yeah.
But really good. I'm fascinated to see how the Yankee fan Devin Williams relationship kind of pans itself out.
Yeah, we would say this about any closer, but yeah, I mean, he is going to have some like, oh, that's a few too many walks and it's getting a little dicey. But the talent is, I mean, the strikeouts are obviously ridiculous. So
first boo, you
Yankees fan should be feeling good.
What month? Devin Williams, first boo.
April. Not even a question. Let's move on to another trade that was not quite as high profile, and we are not going to spend quite as much time on it, but this is interesting. As the Rays and A's, I have to imagine when either team is trading away players this season and the player finds out, oh, I'm getting traded, they might think, oh well, I'm not gonna have to play in a minor league park, oops, unless you're getting traded to the other team playing in a minor league park in 2025. As the Rays and A's consummate a fascinating swap involving a bunch of pitchers that you probably never heard of, but you're going to learn about them right now. The A's acquire left-handed pitcher Jeffrey Springs, left-handed pitcher Jacob Lopez. The Rays acquire right-handed pitcher Joe Boyle, minor league first base outfielder Will Simpson, minor league right-hander Jacob Waters, and a compensation round pick, which you can trade draft picks. These are very specific draft picks that you're allowed to trade. This pick will probably be in the mid-30s of the 2025 draft, so a very valuable draft pick. Jake, I know you don't have a waterfall of emotions and excitement and just feelings about this deal, but Jeffrey Springs is a good pitcher when he's healthy, and the A's are trying to like build a team where you're like, the A's? Huh, the A's?
I'm out here on my honeymoon, and I'm only thinking about Jeffrey Springs, baby. That's just the way things roll. Springs was great in 22. Then he got TJ. He was all right in 24 once he came back. The Rays gave him a fascinating extension. Mm-hmm. So he is like Tampa Bay expensive, but like baseball regular, and $10.5 million for a guy who could provide above average production from a starting pitcher is potentially very valuable. The Rays, and I put this in quotes, could not afford to take that risk, especially when they just have so many people who can start and pitch and suck up innings. I find him interesting. And then the other guy who's fascinating in this trade is Joe Boyle, because Joe Boyle is the epitome, the caricature of throws outrageously hard and has no idea where it is going. He is 6'7". He is built like two people. You know the in BoJack Horseman, the two kids in a trench coat?
Yes. Vincent Adultman.
Vincent Adultman. Joe Boyle is like Vincent Adultman doubled, where it's two kids on top of each other, but then like two kids to the side of that, also in a trench coat. Like, he is four people, if that
especially when he's wearing the specs. It's a very interesting look for Joe Boyle. But what's so amazing about him is there's versions of Joe Boyle that are just like automatically in the bullpen, right? Like, we're not even messing with this. But he's always thrown just enough strikes and he's thrown just enough different pitches to where now this will be the third team that's like, I can fix him. I can make this happen. And yeah, I mean, there's just very few pitchers with as raw arm talent that he has. And he has remained a starter miraculously. I mean, his minor league numbers are like truly hilarious when you look at just the walks and strikeouts that he was compiling in the Red system. And then he was traded to Oakland. And now he's traded to Tampa Bay. And if it's going to happen anywhere, this is where it's going to be. And I can't wait to see what that looks like.
I don't want to waste too much time flying through these other prospects. So I want to get to the main question here, which is, what are the Rays trying to do? It's similar to what the Brewers were trying to do with Devin Williams, which is, if there's a player they think is not worth the money they're paying them, they will trade you right away.
Yep.
They will keep kicking the can down the road and acquiring a bulk of good players later on. What is fascinating, however, is what the A's are trying to do. And to me,
100%,
this is the takeaway from this deal. This is what I want people to understand. The A's are currently at a $65 million payroll. If they do not get to a $105 million payroll this year, they risk a grievance with the players' union. This is an article that Evan Drellick wrote over at The Athletic a couple weeks ago. They need to get to that money. It's like if you have a gift card from somewhere with an expiration date, like you got to spend that money. You got to get there, right? There's a minimum. This has happened at the party the night before my wedding, the welcome party, where it was like, we have a booze minimum and we're like,
keep drinking, friends. Short.
Like, please go get expensive stuff. Like, you have to go do that.
Right. And so, again, I don't like it. If they get to $98 million, will they get a grievance? I don't know the specifics of that. I'm not that I don't trust Evan's reporting. The point is, there is more spending to be done here. And
which is
this is
so silly that it's the A's are like, I gotta spend.
But this is an important move because the narrative around that is who's going to take their money. Well, Jeffrey Springs doesn't have a choice. Right. And so the A's, this is a way to do that, is to trade for players who are making money. I have a feeling they are going to convince some other free agents to come play in Sacramento for a year or two. They desperately need a third baseman. They still need more pitching, absolutely, if they are going to get back to being like a legitimate, you know, good baseball team and not just like a sneaky, annoying baseball team to play. So there's obviously more holes on the roster, but I'm curious if they do get there by trading for more guys who are maybe making more money than you expect, or if they can't convince guys to sign there.
They're going to give Yoan Moncada 1 year, $30 million.
Absolute layup. So, I feel bad stealing this idea, but I am going to do it anyway and just share it. But speculating with former podcast guest and host Ben Nicholson Smith, Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman is a good way to raise the payroll and get some innings. And maybe the Yankees want to hold on to him now as insurance because Cortez is gone.
But we should
credit
write
to BNS
this.
On that one.
We should write this together. How do the A's get to the, how do they spend
because,
the money?
Because the thing is, like, it's just impossible to predict what free agents are going to be willing to do it, right? There's just no way of knowing, right? Why would any of us assume that they were going to give Luis Severino this massive deal and that he was going to be thrilled to take it? How are we going to do that? So there are more of those, but predicting those, whereas trades, it's like, sorry, that's the business. All right, Jake, let's take one more break. And when we return, we will turbo mode through a few more moves before we take off.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's throw it in turbo mode. Moves you kind of care about, maybe. The Atlanta Braves sign Brian De La Cruz. 4 names, 0 hits for the Pittsburgh Pirates after getting dealt there during the deadline. Atlanta needs outfield depth. Thoughts?
Brian De La Cruz, by WAR and WRC+, the worst player in baseball after the Pirates acquired him. So that is why they non-tendered him. And that was really embarrassing for both player and team. And now he will help the Braves at least until Ronald Acuña Jr. is back.
Brian De La Cruz, who has the single best laugh and voice in baseball, it is Mutombo-y. If you are ever out in the world at a restaurant and you see Brian De La Cruz, go talk to him so you can hear his voice.
Go make him laugh. The Cubs signed Carson Kelly. We might have mentioned this during the winter meetings, but it went official a couple days ago. This is interesting just because if you need catching, you're running out of names. The only free agent catchers left really are Yasmani Grandal, Elias Diaz, that's All-Star Game MVP Elias Diaz, Reese McGuire, James McCann. There are some good teams whose catching situations are no bueno, and I'm curious what they're going to do. But the Cubs they were one of those teams where I was like, is Miguel Amaya really the plan? They get Carson Kelly. I think that's a solid move.
The 1 year, $4 million deal for Austin Hedges somehow looking like an absolute heist.
Yes. Amen to that. Man, I mean, seeing the catcher contracts has been totally random. Again, like Gary Sanchez getting the same deal as Danny Jansen is amazing. The Dodgers signed David Bodie. I just wanted to mention, this is a minor league deal. He is a good chance he never plays for the Dodgers. But David Bodie is a career and situation that I just don't totally understand. But if he's awesome with the Dodgers, is he going to... What do they need David Bodie for? I'm trying to think.
I don't know. David Bodie was with the Cubs. The Cubs signed him to like a super cheap extension for a lot of years and not a lot of money to be a depth piece, and he barely played up in the big leagues. Best known for that walk-off home run he hit against the Nationals on Sunday Night Baseball, which led to the most uncomfortable moment of my media career, which was I think he hit that home run in 2018, and then 9 months later he had a kid, and yeah. I made a joke about it on the air, and then laid out, and then the producer on the show we were doing didn't cut, and it was just like me on the air having made a joke about David Bodie.
That's so funny. I remember that. Yes, that was a walk-off grand slam down by three, so that is why it was not just a regular walk-off home run.
Yeah,
I remember that. Wow, thank you so much for bringing that memory back. All right, no more David Bodie. The last move, not even a move, but piece of news in turbo mode. This could be a longer conversation at some point. The Twins are for sale. We knew that. But there is some reporting. 50-50
splitsies?
There are some reporting. Well, if we are, we are going to have potentially outbid the Ishbia brothers, who are two very wealthy businessmen from Michigan who already bought the Phoenix Suns and are now interested in getting involved in potentially buying a baseball team. This would be a big deal because any ownership change is a big deal. And the Twins have been utterly irrelevant otherwise this offseason. They have done literally nothing besides make a Rule 5 pick. And if they sell their team to the Ishbias, if the Pollads sell a team to the Ishbias, that will be a longer conversation. But it is on. It has made it to MLB trade rumors, unless it has made it to turbo mode.
Ishbias, Jordan, they're Jewish. Oh, yeah.
They are.
I'm curious.
Maybe they can swing a deal. Maybe can they get? Do you think they can get the team and sign Alex Bregman in time? What do we think?
It would be
impressive. I don't think Alex Bregman's going to be on the market quite long enough for that. Jake Mintz, we must conclude with one of our favorite segments, Baseball in the Wild. Jake, you are in Vietnam on your honeymoon, and you are making time not just for this podcast, but for other baseball consumption. Tell me about your experience. What have you brought to us here on this edition of Baseball in the Wild?
Two quick stories. The first one is, I did a food tour here in Hanoi the other night. There were five people on the food tour, me and my wife, one woman by herself, and another American couple honeymooning. The gentleman, a couple years younger than me, started talking, where are you from, but talking about, oh, what do you do for work? Oh, you know, I write about ball. Oh, you're a baseball writer? This is what he said. What do you think about the Guardians salary dumping Andrés Giménez? First question. And like, it wasn't shocking that the person on the tour like was a Guards fan, right? Or even that this person knew about the Guards. It's a totally valid question. If you're a Guards fan, like that's the question, right? It was the juxtaposition of like motorbikes scooting all around me. I'm eating like a, you know, duck embryo with fish sauce and like Vietnamese mint. And like this guy's asking me about Andrés Giménez. I just like my brain was
fried. You're like, listen, man, like Luis Ortiz, you learned to cutter midseason and you really couldn't pass up that opportunity.
Can you pass me the fish sauce? So that was something. And then the other fascinating thing is whenever I go to a place that's not baseball oriented, I like to just hop over to Google Maps and type baseball into the search bar because you never know what you're going to find. You could be staying right near like a Vietnamese baseball field. Now, I'm not doing that. However, there is a store here, multiple stores. It's called the MLB store. This is not the MLB shop that you are thinking of in Midtown. This is a brand that MLB has launched specifically in parts of Asia. And it is MLB logos and designs on various articles of clothing with zero, I mean zero, player-focused apparel. Like zilch. Like no jerseys. No normal hats or shirts. It's just various wonky versions of like the Red Sox logo in tan on a neon green fanny pack, right?
So it's team like logos that. On just items of clothing in versions that you're not usually used to seeing.
Exactly. And was just a fascinating Baseball in the Wild experience because why would I ever think that would exist?
So is there literally any like even photos of an active player anywhere in the show?
No, there were zero photos.
Not
of any
even
active
like
players.
Ohtani or like
Ohtani
Aaron
was not in the shop. Aaron Judge was not in the shop.
But it's MLB sent, licensed. It's like, this is official.
Yeah, this is not illegal. If my communist Wi-Fi pulls through, I just sent you a picture of me holding a Cleveland Guardians shirt in the store.
Oh, wow.
It is neon pink.
Oh, that's so weird.
And has a bunch of random Guardians logos on it. It was a fascinating experience. I'll probably go again and send some pictures and post.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. All right. A lot of questions there, but thank you for sharing your Baseball in the Wild experience. Surely there will be another edition at some point here on the show. That's going to do it. We did a podcast. I had a great time. This was a good show. In my humble opinion. Hopefully,
thank you,
the fine listeners. Yeah.
Thank you to Uncle Ho Chi Minh for the Wi-Fi.
We appreciate that. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz for making this show possible. Again, we are recording this late on Sunday night because of time zones, so hopefully you're enjoying this on Monday. And we'll be back later this week again. We're going to keep the shows to just twice a week during this part of the offseason. If Juan Soto gets traded, maybe we will change that. But otherwise, you will hear from us on Thursday. So until then, you can email us at baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who let us know that it was a new dawn rising and not new sun rising for...
Yeah, we're
Scott Boris's horrible Sean Manaya joke. We appreciate the feedback as always. And thank you all for listening and telling us that we are stupid. We'll talk to you later this week. Goodbye.